This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. We did a story the other day about whether we can talk ourselves into recession. Maybe was the upshot. But can the president talk us into recession? Maybe. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Friday, the 23rd, I think it is, of August. Good as always to have you along, everybody. The president and this economy we will get to because, well, today was quite a day even for him. But there are, as they say, some economic fundamentals to cover first. Catherine Rampell writes for The Washington Post. Sudeep Reddy is at Politico. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Kai.
So, Catherine, let me start with you, and we'll start with the calmer part of the macroeconomic scene today. The speech by the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jay Powell, out at that big Fed conference in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Much speculation as to how the chairman was going to thread the needle of what the markets are demanding, the president is wanting, and the economy is requiring. He pretty much did it, right? Everybody was reasonably happy, except the president. We'll put him aside for now.
Yeah,
let's put the president aside.
There's a big exception there. Look, I think that he was generally a calming force for markets initially today. And if you look at how Wall Street economists evaluated what he said, at least the notes that I got today suggested that they interpreted his words relatively dovishly, that, you know, he walked this fine line of saying the economy is generally in good shape. There are risks, but if we face those risks, the Fed will be willing and able to step in. And that's what he wants to do, right? He wants to say, be confident, but if you're not confident, you can still be confident that we have your back.
Right. And look, he's got arguably the toughest economic job on the planet here. But Sudeep, he did also go on to say, look, monetary policy and the Federal Reserve cannot save the global economy from, in essence, the president's trade policy.
That's right. There are so many things that the Fed can deal with business spending, deal with consumer spending, deal with confidence in the economy. All of those things are within the Fed's toolkit. But he was saying that international trade is not something that the Fed is equipped for. And we've seen this going back to Chair Yellen and Chairman Bernanke. They all dealt with the same problem of having problems around the world. They have, when you're dealing with global weakness, the U.S. central bank can't be the world's central banker. And Chairman Powell now recognizes that as well. And he's saying that. He's just screaming, please, please, please don't worsen these trade problems. Don't put your hand on the stove. Don't put your hand on the stove. And guess what? The hand keeps going on the stove.
And then the president put his hand on the stove. So we'll set aside for a minute whether or not the president in the United States was serious when he compared Jay Powell to the president of Communist China and who was the bigger enemy of this country, Catherine. But the president did come out with a series of tweets this morning. And then just now, as the gong was sounding, the president followed through on that threat he made this morning to, in essence, elevate things. The Chinese came out this morning with some tariffs of their own. The president now this afternoon has said, I, in return, am going to increase tariffs that exist on Chinese products, and I'm going to slap some new ones on as well. How does this end?
It's really hard to imagine how this ends well, because we keep on going through, I say we, the administration keeps on doubling down on the same strategy, right? Which is that if we just impose a little bit more pain that maybe is on China, yeah, but arguably is on us, then China will cry uncle and they will capitulate and they will give Trump everything that he wants, except it's not clear what exactly he wants because he keeps changing his mind on that as well. So it's not clear how we extricate ourselves from this trade war, given that the pattern thus far is just further and further escalation, neither side backing down. We, of course, have an election coming up. China does not, and arguably is able to withstand the pain for longer than we can because of that. So I can see a lot of scenarios where everybody's made worse off, and we're arguably we're in that scenario. It's really hard to understand how we get to an off-ramp where everybody's, or at least we are better off.
All right, Sudeep, so let me apologize in advance for doing the cable news thing and reading this news to you as it happens, but people need to know what the president is saying here, and this is straight from his Twitter feed. Starting October the 1st, the $250 billion of goods and products from China currently being taxed, and that's an interesting use of the word from him, taxed at 25% will be taxed at 30%, though those are going up. And then he says the $300 billion worth of goods and products from China that was going to be taxed at 10% on September 1st, so this is the additional tranche, will now be taxed at 15%. So existing tariffs going up, the new tariffs are going up as well. Let me ask you this. Does he not realize the electoral damage he seems to be doing to himself? Because analysts far and wide will say the thing he's got going for him is the economy.
The president feels like he has the support of people who want to take on China. He is betting that antipathy toward China is going to win over more voters than a weak economy. That is an extremely aggressive bet, but he's been making that bet throughout 2018 as well, when the economy was not falling apart. And it's not falling apart right now. So even though the financial markets are sending a lot of worrying signals, the economy is still staying above water. And he's hoping that can occur, but his agitation, his anxiety that you're seeing day in and day out, particularly this week, is a sign that maybe that's not going to hold for the next 15 months until Election Day.
Catherine, this economy is staying above water, but the global economy is not, and it all does wind up on our shores, yes?
Some of it will probably wash upon our shores, including a slowdown slash recession in China, right? As much as this administration seems to be rooting for suffering within China, I don't know that they have truly appreciated the contagion effects that can affect not only our allies, China's neighbors and other trading partners, but us. And look, I don't want to suggest that the only risks that we are facing are Trump-inflicted. There are a lot of other global risks out there that could also lead to contagion here. We have 9 major economies around the world that are either in recession or on the verge of recession, and none of that bodes well for us. But that just suggests that maybe this administration might want to think harder about revisiting the ways in which it itself may be contributing to worrisome signs.
Sudeep Reddy, the last 30 seconds to you. I note that this all is happening with Congress out of town. They're going to come back eventually. Do you suppose? I realize the foolhardiness of this question, even as I ask it. Do you suppose anybody speaks up?
Oh, boy. This is the one thing that lawmakers seem to be starting to speak up about even more. Republican senators are saying, please stop it with the trade fight. The trade war is not helping us in our states. It's not helping you and your presidency. It's not helping our economy. And they are the last group of politicians who can probably persuade the president to come down off this ledge, but it's going to take some work throughout the month of September.
We shall see. Sudeep Reddy at Politico, Catherine Rempel at the Washington Post on a crazy Friday. Seriously, thanks you two. Have a nice weekend.
Thanks, Kai.
All right, we'll see you. Stocks. Well, look, they were terrible. Everything was fine while Jay Powell was talking. Then the guy who put him in the job chimed in. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Given the president's tariff tweet storm this afternoon, this won't surprise you, but it honestly escapes me which round of tariffs and counter-tariffs we are on between President Trump and the Chinese. But first of all, that's on me. Second of all, though, be that as it may, Beijing took aim at the American automobile industry today. They reinstated tariffs on U.S.-made cars, up 25 percentage points to a total of 40% import taxes on American cars going over there and 5% on parts. From Washington, Marketplace's Scott Tong reports on the reaction.
Most Ford and GM cars in China are made there. But China's also the number two buyer of autos made here, says Kristen Jicek at the Center for Automotive Research.
These vehicles tend to be either luxury vehicles or iconic vehicles for which there is only one plant in the whole wide world. So the top export is the X5 out of BMW's plant in South Carolina. You see Mustang, Wrangler, Corvette, Camaro.
Even before Beijing's new retaliation, American auto exports to China fell by 100,000 vehicles last year. That's almost half the yearly production of a typical factory. The best-selling U.S. export to China is the BMW X5 SUV. It's made in South Carolina's Spartanburg County. David Britt on the county council says China trade war tariffs from last year have already hurt.
When BMW slows down, everything from the churches to the automotive shops, the restaurants in Spartanburg and across South Carolina affected. It has a ripple effect like dropping a meteor in a swimming pool.
China is also a big buyer of U.S.-made auto parts, which face new tariffs, too. Analyst Kristen Jicek.
We export more parts to China than we do to Germany or the U.K. or Japan, which is, you know, other major auto-producing regions in the world. It's important.
It's not a great time for a new trade wall of China to go up. She notes that auto parts jobs in the U.S. are now shrinking. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Today's corporate news is brought to us by $4 billion and an animated pig. That's what Hasbro is going to spend, cash, by the way, to buy an animation studio called Entertainment One. Peppa Pig is one of its big franchises. So what you have is a company that's turned toys into movies, think Transformers or Battleship or G.I. Joe, buying a company with characters that make great toys. You play it out from there. Marketplace's Erica Barris has that one.
Hasbro's turned a lot of toys into movie and TV franchises. Transformers, My Little Pony, even Ouija.
Spirit, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
That's how the toy industry works now, says San Jose State University professor Elizabeth Sweet.
If you look at what's in the toy aisles today, it's nearly all tied to media.
Media like Peppa Pig.
And this is Daddy Pig. Peppa Pig.
By purchasing Peppa Pig's producer Entertainment One, Hasbro is beefing up its ability to produce content itself rather than with a Hollywood partner, says media analyst Mike Bloxam.
They now compete with the likes of Disney, only they're coming at it first from the toy manufacturer and distribution and intermediary instead of the other way around. It's a huge step for them.
Huge because toy makers have been struggling since retailer Toys R Us closed its doors. There are risks. Hasbro's traditionally been a manufacturing and marketing company. Entertainment One is all about content production. Barbara Carlin is a business professor at the University of Houston.
If you don't have this capability, how good are you going to be in integrating that capability into a company that has traditionally been focused in a very different direction?
Either way, she says, that is the direction the toy and movie industries are moving in. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
You know those calls you get that look like they're local, but when you answer them, even as you're thinking you really shouldn't be, you find out they're actually just a recorded message from somebody claiming to be the Internal Revenue Service or your credit card company or something? Well, there's hope. Big phone companies, Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint, and AT&T by name, and the attorneys general of all 50 states and Washington, D.C., have come to an agreement to try to stop the calls before they get to consumers and figure out where they're coming from. Marketplace's Andy Euler looks at what's in that deal and, perhaps more important, what's not.
The companies are promising to provide customers with free call blocking technology and investigate and trace illegal calls, specifically spam and fraudulent ones. Maureen Mahoney is a policy analyst at Consumer Reports.
Consumers lost an estimated $10.5 billion to phone scams in a recent 12-month period alone. But at the same time, not all unwanted robocalls are coming from scammers.
They're also coming from telemarketers trying to sell you stuff, and this agreement doesn't apply to those calls. She also notes that this pact doesn't include a deadline and is voluntary. It is yet to be signed by smaller companies, which are the source of most of those problem calls. Raymond Tu teaches cybersecurity and computer science at the University of Maryland.
Between these big companies, they're going to help to implement these caller ID authentication technology. So it might force these telephone scammers to use other companies to conduct a scam.
But the problem is, why isn't the government requiring everybody to participate?
Margot Saunders is senior counsel at the National Consumer Law Center. She says this agreement should be thought of as a first step.
This effort is very useful and very helpful to push some of the scammers out of the picture, but it won't solve the robocall problem.
Several major carriers have already adopted their own systems designed to fight caller ID spoofing, and there are bills in Congress aimed at putting robocall regulation into law by next year. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Coming up, the U.S. dollar and what it's worth.
A mediocre-tasting hamburger.
Huh. But first, let's do the numbers. All right, here you go. The Dow Industrials closed down 623 points today. They were off more than 700 at one point, 2.3%, 25,628. The NASDAQ fell 239, 3% even, finished at 7751. The S&P 500 dropped 75 points, a smidge under 2.6%, 2847. There, I should tell you, all of that was before the president's retaliatory tariff tweets this afternoon. You try saying that 10 times fast. For the 5 days gone by, the Dow lost just under 1%. S&P down 1.4%. The NASDAQ fell 1.8% today. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note fell to 1.53%. You're listening to Marketplace. Hey everybody, it's Kai Rizdahl. In the entertainment world these days, we watch TV shows and Oscar-winning films on the same devices and platforms where we also watch cute dog videos. The tech companies are the content companies and vice versa. So with Disney and HBO, Apple and others taking on Netflix, Amazon and Hulu, the content wars are on and the future of watching is anybody's guess.
The big question here still remains, is there going to be one company, whether it's Apple or Roku or something else, that comes along and aggregates all of these streaming services for a discount? That does not exist today. And I think that may be where we're headed, and that looks an awful lot like cable.
Make me smart. Check it out. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. I want you to think about a $1 bill. That green piece of paper with the fancy writing on it and all the symbols. And I want you to think about what it's worth.
A dollar to me is worth half of my bus fare.
About a third of the espresso that I just bought.
A mediocre tasting hamburger.
A canned soda probably. Some candy. Not much.
We all know what the dollar's worth to us. We use it every day. But who decides what that dollar is worth is a whole nother thing.
I don't really know.
I don't know. Good question.
I'm not sure, actually. I'm not entirely sure.
That was Jess Calejas, Phil Klinkon, Spencer Craig, Lali Del Rio, and Daniel Kloman in downtown Los Angeles just the other day. And they're thinking about the value of a dollar the way people normally do, right, in terms of how much it can buy. But when you're talking about the dollar big picture, you have to talk about what it's worth in the global economy, what it's worth to everybody else, because the U.S. dollar is the most important currency in the world. It's used as an official and unofficial currency in a lot of other countries. 90% of foreign exchange trading involves the dollar, and commodities like oil and copper and soybeans are all traded in dollars. We mention all that because President Trump and his advisors have been talking about weakening the dollar lately as a way to boost exports and help American manufacturers. So it's not unreasonable to ask, who actually controls how weak or strong the dollar is?
Well, the strength of the U.S. dollar is a mixture, a combination of a lot of forces, some governmental, both here and abroad, and lots of market forces.
That's Minzy Chin. He's a professor of public affairs and economics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And here's the bigger point. The U.S. dollar, which really is just a green piece of paper,
just has value by virtue of the government saying it has value.
It can buy you a can of soda or a third of an espresso because people believe it's worth something.
Whether it keeps its value depends in large part upon whether the central bank is going to stand behind the currency and making sure that the currency doesn't lose a lot of its value over time.
You catch that? The value of the dollar, and likewise the strength of the dollar compared to other currencies around the world, depends in large part on how much faith people have in what the Federal Reserve is going to do with interest rates in the future to keep inflation from getting out of hand.
So people's expectations about what the strength of the dollar will be in the future also matter for today's strength of the currency.
And then there's everything going on overseas.
So what central banks are doing in other countries with respect to their interest rates, or, you know, how many dollar assets are they buying or selling? So you can see there's a whole mixture of these forces.
That's the first thing you need to understand, that the strength of the dollar depends on a whole bunch of different inputs, both here and in the global economy. So knowing that, how about a little thought experiment then on what it would actually take to weaken the dollar? Because the president thinks it'd be a snap.
I could do that in 2 seconds if I wanted to.
Okay, how?
For starters, the president can go to the Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, and say, we need to intervene. We need to have a currency intervention to weaken the dollar.
I got Megan Green on the phone. She's an economist and senior fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School.
The Treasury has a fund for that. It's called the Exchange Stabilization Fund, the ESF.
A big pile of money set aside just for buying and selling currencies. And so Mnuchin picks up whatever phone is on his desk and calls the guy running the Exchange Stabilization Fund and says, sell dollars, sell dollars. Is that what happens?
Yeah, so Mnuchin has a ton of power over, you know, discretion over when to use this fund. And what you need to do, you can just sell dollars to try to weaken the U.S. dollar. But even more powerful than that is considering what you're trying to manage the dollar against. Mm-hmm. So in total, there's about $100 billion in the ESF, but not all of it is just straight dollars. So the actual amount of cash that could be deployed immediately is about half of that.
$50 billion does not sound like a lot of money.
It isn't. And it's not a lot of money if you want to really convince the markets that you're going to succeed with this. And so what will end up happening is in open markets, investors are going to start betting on whether this will work or not.
Right.
And if they start betting that this won't work, actually that will drive the dollar up and will mean the sums you need to use to intervene need to be even bigger.
To review here, because foreign exchange gets complicated, if President Trump decides he does want to weaken the dollar, and remember, it's a global currency that's traded billions of times a day, trillions of dollars worth, a benchmark that's at the mercy of a complicated mix of international interest. But if the president decided he wanted to do something, he could sell dollars and buy other currencies, but he's only got about $50 billion to work with.
So unfortunately, I think the U.S. is picking a massive fight with all of the bullies on the playground and is bringing a pea shooter to it.
Now, there is a way to boost the firepower of that pea shooter.
In the past, the Fed has actually gone and also intervened alongside with the Treasury. So when the Treasury uses the ESF, the Fed will often match it.
We should be clear here. The government has intervened to weaken the dollar before. They did it in 1985, an international agreement called the Plaza Accord.
But this time around might be different because in the past it's been cooperative. It's been part of a coordinated international effort. This time the government would be going it alone, and also at a time when the president is constantly criticizing the Fed. So the Fed might be wary right. of going and doing the government's bidding for it.
The president wants more and bigger interest rate cuts to weaken the dollar. But if the Fed went along,
I think there's a big question about whether that would really matter.
Because typically, when the Fed cuts interest rates like it did last month, the dollar goes down. But after that rate cut in July,
the U.S. dollar hardly moved. And I think that's because the U.S. dollar isn't being driven by changes in monetary policy so much as fundamentals about U.S. growth.
Growth prospects around the world, we have to say, look worse than they do here.
And so the U.S. economy is kind of the cleanest shirt in the dirty laundry pile. Everybody else's economies look much worse. And so people are piling into U.S. dollar denominated assets, and that's pushing the dollar up. So it's unclear. Traditionally, the Fed could help play a role in weakening the dollar, but it's really unclear whether that would work this time around.
Which brings us back to something else that Menzie Chin from the University of Wisconsin said when he was talking about what's making the dollar stronger right now.
There's this matter that the U.S. dollar is a special currency. It's considered a safe asset. And so in times of discord or uncertainty or perceived risk, investors around the world and in the U.S. flock to dollar-based assets.
Discord or uncertainty or perceived risks like, say, the two biggest economies on the planet in a trade war where nobody knows what's going to happen.
That uncertainty is driving lots of investors around the world towards safe assets. And at the moment, that's the dollar.
Which explains why the dollar hit its high for the year just this week.
If Trump wanted to weaken the value of the dollar, one thing he could do is stop threatening other countries with additional tariffs and going back and forth on what sort of protectionist threats he wants to impose upon other countries.
So where does this leave us? The president is considering intervening in the currency markets without enough firepower to do what he wants, which could start a currency war and probably wouldn't weaken the dollar anyway, because as things stand right now, dollars are still some of the safest things money can buy. All right, just to take us somewhere else here for a minute, because it's been a tough couple of weeks of news, I know. Another installment of our occasional series, Automatic Reply. Some of the more creative out-of-office email responses people set up when they go on vacation.
Gone fishing.
Can't beat that, right? Tom Hanley is a retired teacher in upstate New York. Tell us, would you, about a good out-of-office you've seen. You can do that at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, in which Apple really just needs to get over itself. The company came out with a new credit card last week, you might have heard, made out of titanium, integrated with Apple Wallet, all the Apple bells and whistles. But also this, and this is from the Apple Support website, it's a quote, I promise. If your titanium Apple card comes into contact with contaminants that can cause stains, gently wipe with a soft, slightly damp, lint-free microfiber cloth. I could go on, but I think you get the idea. All right, we got to go, but let me recap the president's tariff tweets on the way out here, because it's kind of a big deal and it went by kind of in a blur with Sudeep and Catherine. The tariffs we have right now on $250 billion worth of Chinese imports are going to go up from 25% to 30% on October the 1st. And the 10% tariffs he has been promising on the remaining $300 billion worth of Chinese imports are going to go up to 15%. That'll happen in two chunks, September the 1st and December the 15th, which means that by Christmas, everything we import from China is going to have extra import taxes on it. And with that, as I said, lousy on Wall Street today. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargalis. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. Have a good weekend, everybody. We will see you again on Monday, all right? This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.